You're listening to the show that talks about stuff the others can't, don't, or won't. The Drew Marshall Show on Joy 1250.
You may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You might like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls. But you're going to have to serve somebody.
Folks, I am quite looking forward to this next interview. Amy Scobie was a staff member for the Church of Scientology for 27 years. She escalated up the ranks to the top of church management by the time she was 20, where she remained for two decades. For much of that time, she served as a member of the Watchdog Committee, the highest management body in Scientology, which supervises every sector that makes up the church today. In this book that she has written, Scientology, Abuse at the Top, Amy relates her experiences from her discovery of Scientology as a 14-year-old to episodes in building the Celebrity Center Network for the likes of Tom Cruise, John Travolta, and Kirstie Alley. You know what? I just said this to her off air, and I've said this to a couple of people along the way. This is a great read, and it's a great read because it's real. It's authentic. It's her story. That's simply it. She's not a fancy schmancy author. She's just spilling her guts. And that's what she's going to do on the show today, I think, a little bit. Hi, Amy.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, it's my honor. Where do you live? You're down on the West Coast, I think.
I'm in the Northwest, okay. By Seattle.
Do you have to be, like quiet about where you live and secretive and stuff?
No, they know exactly where I live, unfortunately.
So why is that unfortunate? Have you been hassled?
Oh, yeah. The way that Scientology treats critics is pretty nasty. They'll go to all sorts of, you know, means to keep their critics silent or discredit them in different ways. And I knew that before I started speaking out, but I decided it was more important to stick to my integrity than worry about the hassles I would get from Scientology.
Okay, what would you say to me? I've had Yvette Shank, she's the Canadian president of Scientology. I'm not sure what the title is, but that's basically the gist. And I've had her on the show. She's been in studio here, and she's invited me to some functions. I haven't been able to go. I would have loved to have gone. Would you say run away, don't have anything to do with her? Because, you know, the way she strikes me as a lovely individual. Is that just sort of a wolf in sheep's clothing?
You know, Scientologists in general are very wonderful people. I think that, you know, so I wouldn't advise you to run. I think that people need to be aware of what happens inside the organization, and particularly as you go higher within the organization, because that's where it becomes really strange. It becomes like a dangerous cult, and that's what I try to expose in writing the facts that I covered in my book.
Right.
It's not when you first discover Scientology, you think it's wonderful. Everybody's happy. They believe that you're a spiritual being. That's wonderful. A lot of people can agree on that. You feel that you can achieve more goals and become better and more spiritually aware and maybe recognize who you were in previous lives and be able to go into future lives with awareness rather than amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
And you want that. And then there's a lot of people that are working toward that. But as you just go deeper and deeper within the organization, there's more and more control, and it's a lot of deception and abuse and human rights violations. And
you know, but somebody's going to push back on that and say, look, in any organization, the more involved you are and the more you sort of, I guess, are aware of the inner circles, of the inner sanctum, you're going to become disillusioned. You're going to see the humanity of it all. And so that's the same of any organization. Is that a fair pushback or not really?
You know, you're probably right. It is, but it gets really intense in a cult because it's mind controlling, it's mind altering, and it's dangerous because the fact is, like, the current leader of Scientology, his name is David Miscavige. He's what I classify as a sociopath, and he's taken the power that he has as a quote-unquote religious leader, and he's abusing it, and he's doing things to people that can cause and has caused both physical and emotional
damage, destruction.
Yeah. And I feel that information needs to be made known because he's leading the church, and has for probably about 27 years now.
Okay, right away, outsiders would hear the story of somebody who used to be this, had a bad experience, isn't any longer, and is now speaking out about it. And we hear these stories time and time again over the last number of years. For most of our lives, we hear about disgruntled people from organization X, Y, or Z.
Z. That's a way to poo-poo what somebody, a whistleblower, is saying.
Yeah.
And I don't like that because my whole family are humanitarians. And I joined Scientology to stand up for what I thought was right in the world and to help people. And that was my whole, since I can remember, that's all I ever wanted to do. And I thought I was doing that with Scientology. And really, I was finally able to break away and see the damage that it is causing people. And I want to expose that. I'm still fighting for human rights, except for now part of that is exposing the abuse within Scientology. And it's not, oh, I'm a disgruntled member. No, I'm not. I'm a whistleblower. And I am a humanitarian. And that's how I'd like to be seen, not as a disgruntled former member.
Okay. Well, as someone in media, it's my job to do a little background check on whoever comes on the show. There was a lady a couple of weeks ago, whose teenage daughter has been lost to the human trafficking trade. And a horrible story.
Yeah.
Why would you do background research on... Well, look, I think it's just being prudent. So I spoke to one of the detectives down in Las Vegas and got the goods.
Yeah.
Went ahead with it. I also spoke with Jeff Hawkins, who you know. Jeff was a former guest on our show. He was a former Scientologist leader as well, spent about 35 years working for the church all over the world, and top upper echelons as well. And I said, what do you know about this Amy Scobie? And you don't want to know what he said?
Yes.
He said he considers you a friend.
Fantastic.
That what you saw, what you witnessed, corroborates his story. As well, as a matter of fact, when Miscavige abused him, smacked him around, whatever the situation was, Jeff fell into your cubicle. Do you remember that day?
Oh my God, it was so clear. Because David Miscavige jumped up on top of the conference room table and then lunged at Jeff, who was on the other side of the table. It was a marketing meeting that was occurring. And knocked him down to the floor in right where my desk is.
Yeah.
From the conference room table. So they're struggling at my feet, and David Miscavige is ripping his shirt, buttons are popping off,
change is coming out of, that's exactly what Jeff said, that you helped him pick up the loose change that came out of his pants.
Yeah, and I gave returned it all back to him. He was really shaken up by that incident, and which anyone would be.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that look, even in Jesus' day, at his trial, the witnesses couldn't get their story straight. And yet here you and Jeff have your individual stories, but your stories concur with each other's story.
That's correct. And you'll find another 20 or even more people who have witnessed David Miscavige physically abusing people. People are speaking out now and making it because it was really, really scary to speak out because Scientology, with unlimited funds, would threaten to sue you, would put private investigators on you, would... do a smear campaign, like by passing out leaflets. They called me. They said I was, a serial sexual deviant that can't control her wanton sexual desires, or something like this. And that I'm a repeat adulteress. I've never committed adultery in my life, but this is what they're saying. You search on Google, and it says Amy Scobie adulteress when you do the search. So it's just wonderful. They put out a magazine called Freedom Magazine, quote unquote, that says that, it says on there like 23 times that I'm a repeat adulteress. I was married 17 years. I never kissed another man the whole time I was married to my husband during the time, until the very end when I was trying to escape and trying to work out somebody to go with and all this kind of stuff. It's just crazy. And I think it's because they really don't want people to hear my story or other people's stories who similarly get defamed,
Mm-hmm.
And they have to figure out something to say, I guess.
Okay. Well, look, before we get into your story, let me just say, from what I've read, the very little that I know about you,
mm-hmm.
Amy, I am so sorry that you went through that kind of crap.
Well, thank you. I mainly want to make it known so that I can prevent other people from having to go through it. I feel like that's my mission now.
Good, good. 14 years old. Was your mother involved in the organization?
Yes, and that's how I got started myself.
And from what I read in your book, you seemed like a very eager, teachable, willing young lady, so much so that it actually worked against you. I guess, the first red flag goes up when one of the leaders gets you to perform oral sex on him.
That's right. 35-year-old married man, I was 14 years old, and that happened inside the church.
Okay, so 14-year-old, it sounds like there's a bit of naivety that's going on. You're eager, you're teachable, you're willing to please, probably a little bit too much. But I mean, were you really that vulnerable? Were you really that naive to then not go? Like, I mean, that was a huge moment right there, and you knew something was wrong inside of your head at that time.
I was a little bit scared. And I think that part of I spoke to church officials about the situation shortly after that.
Yeah, and then you got in trouble for it.
Yes, I got in trouble.
Excuse me?
Yeah. I did get in trouble. I was put into what's called a lower condition of treason and made to do amends and stuff like that. So was that person. And we were put into different locations and stuff. But, in terms of being naive and everything, I mean, that what happened was the church official basically said, that we handle our own in Scientology, quote-unquote. No, my parents weren't in, like, let's keep this to ourselves type of thing. Because
sure.
The authorities weren't informed, my parents weren't informed, and that guy would have been hauled off to jail, I swear to God, if my dad found out. Right away.
Yeah, that'd be the least of his worries if your dad found out.
my dad.
he might be protected in prison.
You're right. Yeah. But, oh boy, my dad is furious reading my book because I didn't talk about this stuff.
Well, that's what I wanted to say. Okay, so let me just paint the picture. Your mom and dad, they're separated at this point in time,
yes,
are they?
Yes, that's right, when I was 11 years old.
Right.
Yes.
So then, they see you as someone they can groom. Someone who is eager to learn and teachable and is loyal to Scientology because of the heritage that your mom has given, et cetera, et cetera. And you start just absolutely flying up the ladder.
I did. I was really enthusiastic because I was a teenager. I didn't really have a purpose. I didn't know what I was going to do in life, and my friends at that time were just, hanging around after school and stuff. But now I was wanted. I was wanted at the organization. I felt like I was a part of a team, and that it was all for helping people. And I was so proud that I found what I was going to be doing in life at such an early age. And you're really told how important you are, how important the mission is, how everything that you're doing is greatly benefiting the world. So I was just, I just had my chin up high, when I started, and I wanted to dedicate myself to that.
And then you end up at a big conference where they want all the members to come together, and mm-hmm. they're going to let everyone know that Scientology is now going to sort of, not take over the world, but we're going to make our name known on the map. And we're gung-ho about this new movement, and let's giddy up and go. These people on this list, we want you to come into the back room because you are going to be our giddy up and go people here. I'm not using the right terms, but and your name gets called.
I was in shock.
out of how many people?
Oh, there was probably 200 people there, and there was like 12 people called to the back.
And you were how old then?
I was 15.
So this means you get to go over to their headquarters in California, is that right?
That's right. What they did is they called me to the back room as well as other people, and they had us raise our right hand and get a swearing-in ceremony to join what's called the C Organization, and they had us sign billion-year contracts to commit ourselves for the rest of eternity.
I'm sorry, how many years?
1 billion.
Wow.
It's basically a gesture toward, eternally commitment
yeah.
toward, helping people through Scientology. And so I didn't really think I had a choice. They were all decked out in these uniforms with white gloves and swagger sticks and caps and everything like that. And I'm, like, raising my right hand and swearing in and signing this contract. Meantime, my mom isn't even there, and I'm freaking out. But then, and they told her that I was joining. They told my mom, and she said, no, she's not. She's a minor, and she needs to finish school first and everything. But they twisted her arm, And she signed a parental consent, and off I went.
And you lied to your dad. You told him you were going to France?
Yeah, he wanted to sue my mom over that. That was because when I got to Paris, I cried, and I called him, and I said, I lied to you. You know, I'm not going to Paris to be a model. That's what the recruiters wanted me to say.
Right.
So that I didn't get any flack from my dad, and I could get on an airplane right away.
So, see, there's a bit of a heads up right there. You're encouraging a minor to lie to the parents about what's really going on.
That's right.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, that should have been a real signal right there.
Was your dad into the Scientology as well?
Never.
Was that part of the reason that their marriage broke down? Your mom was gung-ho and your dad wasn't?
No, not at all. They got a divorce and then my mom discovered Scientology.
Okay, all right. Yeah. When you found out that your mom wasn't allowed to go with you over to the big institution there in California, the headquarters, couldn't be part of the same direction you were going. That must have been a scary moment, because I think, you know, with every teenager, there's those wake-up calls, and I think that wake-up call might have come while you were living in that concrete dorm, not even given the key to the bathroom, and all these duties you had to do, and it was, you were by yourself at such a young age. So
it was the first time away from home, so
really?
it was pretty scary. Even though I liked the fact that I was having an adventure, I didn't like the fact that they told me that my mom wasn't going to be able to be at the same location I was going. So I locked myself in a room and you know, tied a rope around the doorknob and wedged a chair under there. And I said, I'm not coming out because, you know, I don't want to stay.
Right.
I want to go home. And, of course, the original person who recruited me came up and spoke to me and said, you know, that they'll fix it so that my mom would be able to be at the same location and stuff like that. But anyway,
see,
it didn't really happen that way, but
Amy, looking back on this, I hope you don't, I'm sure you've gone through a season of bashing yourself up a little bit, and why didn't I see, and I should have been.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Oh, writing my book, I went up and down the emotions like
right.
Nobody's business. Yeah.
But I hope you can see it now with a little bit more clarity. You know, you were a young kid in an organization that is probably one of the best organizations when it comes to grooming, that in the Catholic Church. And I say that with a bit tongue-in-cheek because I'm not talking about the entire Catholic Church, but obviously I'm talking about the pedophiles and all pedophiles that are really,
yeah.
That's their gift is grooming.
Mm-hmm.
And you were groomed, you were manipulated, they said the right things, and next thing you know, time has gone by, you're being promoted up the ladder.
And now I'm responsible.
Yeah, and now you're responsible, right. But too little, too late?
Yeah. You know, I was reading a book called Combating Cult Mind Control from Steve Hassan,
right,
which is a fascinating read, and I'm in touch with him via email, too. But one of the things that I realized is that I didn't join Scientology and join the C organization. I was deceptively recruited and indoctrinated.
Right.
And that's an important thing, because I lost my own will at that point, because my mind and what it is that I'm going to do is now the organization's, you know,
yeah.
Mind and will. And you follow the rules or there's punishments. And I was indoctrinated in those punishments, and I didn't want to experience that again.
Yeah.
You know, so I tried to toe the line.
When did your mom find out about the sexual abuse?
When she read my book.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is your mom still a Scientologist?
No, she's not. And I got my family back together just recently. And because part of mind control is information control. If you don't have all the information on something, you can't analyze it
right.
Completely
right.
To be able to make the same decisions. So my stepfather, who was still in Scientology, very active, was considering joining staff, and my mom panicked and actually contacted me because the family has been disconnected because of the disconnection policy of Scientology, that if you're not in good standing with Scientology, anyone associated with Scientology cannot no longer be connected.
Right.
So I was had a forced disconnection situation with my family, but my mom called me, and so I paid a surprise visit, and I said to my stepdad, let me tell you what I know goes on behind closed doors in Scientology and at the top of the organization, which is running the whole organization around the world. And I told him. He walked away, and he is now getting his money back. And he decided he cannot continue to contribute to something that's actually destructive. So So I was very happy that day. We had a big celebration getting the whole family back together.
When did your mom leave the organization?
She left after I left, and then she tried to stay in good standing and disconnected from me for a while. And then it wasn't until, like, 2 months ago that our whole family's been gotten back together. We did sneak seeing each other. But the private investigators knew that because whenever we got together, they happened to just be there.
What do you mean? Who's private investigators?
Scientology hired private investigators to follow me all the time. I had sometimes three private investigators on me at a time when I moved down to Florida where my husband's family is, and we just recently moved back here. They staked out my dad's house when I was visiting in October last year, everything.
Can you explain to me what going over the rainbow means?
The place, which is the Hemet compound in California, it's 500 acres, and that's where International Management is located, and it was a confidential place for the longest time because that's where L. Ron Hubbard was going to reside and shoot films, and he'd been there before. So it was not called by its name, and nobody was supposed to know where it was besides the people who worked there. And so the term over the rainbow was coined so that when, you know, it's Golden Era Productions, and it's called where the studios are, it's called Gold for short.
Right.
So when you have gold at the bottom of the rainbow, so it was over the rainbow is where you're going.
Okay, so basically when L. Ron wanted a place on land,
mm-hmm.
get off the boat and continue doing his thing.
Yeah.
And this was a secret little compound, so that was the code for the compound.
That's correct.
And they wanted you to go there, but not your mother. And then that changed, and they eventually bent, you know, I don't know, changed whatever the rules were so that your mom could come.
No, she never went there. What they did is they changed that I wasn't going to go over there.
Right, changed your position. Right, right, right.
Exactly. So I did see her for, you know, I don't know, a couple months. And then I ended up going over the rainbow, and then I didn't see her for,
okay. You know, the tough thing about these sorts of conversations is I have way too many questions and not enough time. I would love to sit down and have a coffee with you. Unfortunately, you live very far away.
Yeah.
So let me just, at the risk of being a tad crass, let's cut through it a little bit.
Okay.
Craziest thing you saw, craziest case of abuse that you saw.
It was when David Miscavige attacked a man named Mike Rinder. Who was the executive responsible, you know, for a whole sector of Scientology. And I don't know why he attacked him, but he came in a rage, and he grabbed him around the throat and thralled at him so hard he was turning purple and then took him by the neck and threw him down on the ground and kicked him. So that incident was one of the ones that had the most impact on me because of the fact that it was so sudden and so drastic.
Did Miscavige have...
I don't believe he kicked him on that incident, actually. That wasn't, you know...
Okay.
But it was strangling around the neck until his veins were popping out. He couldn't breathe. He was struggling in his chair and then throwing him down by his neck onto the ground.
Did Miscavige have bodyguards with him at all times?
He has an entourage that he walks around with, like so many people. But whenever he goes off the property, the Hemet compound, he would have bodyguards with him.
What about on the compound?
Not bodyguards. He would have his entourage, which would consist of his assistant and his, you know.
Right, but my thinking is, why wouldn't the guy fight back?
You know, that's because he has the power to immediately send you to the Rehabilitation Project Force, sentence you to...
So punishment, fear of punishment.
Yeah, bad. And also, he can ban you from the upper levels, which is your spiritual salvation. He with a wave of his hand, he has ultimate control. He can force you, you know, separated from your family, everything. He has done that on so many occasions that you know, if you just need to stay in line.
How come we don't hear about this on Oprah?
Well, I don't know. Oprah, she interviews Tom Cruise and Kirstie Alley and John Travolta, and, you know, and doesn't know of what's going on behind the glitter and
but come on, her,
from those guys.
Her people, her research people have got to, they've got to know that these kind of stories are out there.
I would hope so. I sent something to her email, you know, to her website and stuff like that. I didn't hear anything back, but, you know, the information is out, and I think it's just going to be a choice is probably not the nicest thing in the world to report on, just because of the repercussions that Scientology puts on people. Like, did you see on CNN, he did a week-long expose on the violence at the top, Anderson Cooper, 360.
Right.
And they have put out and sent to all national major media a three-part video defaming him and every person that was in that expose.
So the Scientologists put together.
Was so attacked.
Put together a video trying to def.
To attack Anderson Cooper and his manlyhood and his ability to investigate.
His
and
manlyhood.
History, just nasty, really nasty. I think it's just really exposing the criminals that they are.
Well, yeah, they're just bullies. They're religious bullies.
Really. Yes. And I don't even call it a religion. I think that's suspect.
Well, you know, but when I say the word religion, I don't have a big smile that comes over my face. I'm not impressed with any religion. As I just listened to Bill Maher talk about on Scarborough Country, religion is the thing that gets in the way of God trying to help man. You know?
I think that's very fascinating. Organized religion, particularly, I really am fearful about in general. And I believe in God, and I believe that there's a supreme being.
Well, that's what I want. I mean, that's the obvious question is, once you've been burned, I think I asked Jeff this as well, but I can't remember. Once you've been burned by a religion, because I've become acquaintances with a fellow named Tal Backman, and Tal is the son of Randy Backman, who's a big Canadian musician. He was with Backman Turner Overdrive, the Guess Who, Taking Care of Business, the big song. Tal had his huge hit, She's So High. You know, these guys are famous, blah, 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 blah. Tal's a fantastic guy, a brilliant thinker, but he walked away from Mormonism. He was featured in Bill Maher's movie, Religious. Tal walked away from Mormonism, the religion of his family, and then told his father all about this stuff, and his father said, well, I guess we've been lied to all these years. And when I asked Tal about, well, what's next, what do you, you know, do you ever see yourself buying into something else? Oh, my goodness. What a reaction. So what's your reaction to that question?
You know, it's funny. I had some people come and knock on my door, you know, about joining their religion. I don't even know what it was. Yeah. white shirts and black ties. And I said, you came to the wrong house.
You are in the yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, I am, like, wary of organized religion because of what people will do with it. And I just feel that it's really important for people to believe in what they want to believe in, because that's a human right. I do believe in spirit, you know, that we're spiritual beings. I do believe in God, and I think that I found my mission, which is to, you know, raise awareness on organized religion, particularly Scientology, as a dangerous cult because of the abuses and the practices that it has, which are violations of human rights, such as family disconnection.
Right.
And it's really important that people, you know, are aware of that, because I don't want them to get hurt. And so many people have written to me since I wrote my book, thanking me and also telling me their stories, which only strengthens my resolve to keep the expose going.
Good for you. Good for you. Amy Scobie is the author of Scientology Abuse at the Top. A website to go to is scobiepublishing.com. Scobie is spelled S-C-O-B-E-E. scobiepublishing.com. At the risk of sounding a little corny, the celebrity side of things here. Did you hang out with them?
I met, I didn't do a lot of hanging out because I was extremely busy.
Right.
But my job was to put celebrity centers there and make them, you know, beautiful and make them.
When you say celebrity centers, you mean a spot on the compound where celebrities can come and hang?
No, they're its own church of Scientology, where and they're called celebrity centers for celebrities, and they're built so that they're beautiful, that they're secure, they're manned with security so that any celebrity could come in and you know, not be in the tabloids the next day, and they have the top trained people, because you want celebrities happy and you want them satisfied with their service, because a goal from L. Ron Hubbard is to make celebrities into a walking success story of Scientology. Because if they'll promote Scientology in the media or to their other bigwig friends, then you're going to have that many more people coming in. And it's a major strategy. This was very, very important. And so I didn't hang with them, but I met all the top celebrities of Scientology for sure.
You know, I've often thought with the sad and untimely death of John Travolta's son, if that would at all send a wake-up call to him, because from what the very little that I understand about Scientology, those sorts of things should not happen.
It should not happen.
According to their belief system.
Right, that's exactly right. And it really should not happen. I do hope that that has occurred. What I really hope for the celebrities is that they get themselves informed, because people like Tom Cruise, when they promote Scientology, they're bringing more people in, and more people are being deceived. And so therefore, it's their responsibility to actually know what's going on, not just turn a blind eye. Tom Cruise says, "I've seen the reports, and I don't believe them." Well, that's irresponsible.
Yeah, but hold on. If he's seen the reports...
I don't believe he has.
No, I was going to say, if he's actually seen the negative press about Scientology, should he not be in trouble? Because it doesn't...
He's not supposed to see them. What he's actually talking about is what Scientology will give him and provide him with. Okay, Marty Raspin, for example, came out and said that David Miscavige abused people and confined people. And, you know, here's the thing that shows that Marty Raspin is insane, which is they keep saying he's psychotic, except for he was the head of the organization for like 27 years. So to say that, and to say that they're authorities on the mind, and they say their top guy was psychotic anyway. So
yeah.
It's just contrary. But
yeah.
Then they provide Tom Cruise with all the information about how it's just all totally unbelievable. So he's not listening to what the truth is. He's just being told by Scientology what they want him to know.
Okay, just before we say goodbye, we've got to hear the final chapter here. And folks, the in-between stuff is in this book, and I would recommend it. I would highly recommend this. This is a great book. ScobiePublishing.com is a website you want to go to, ScobePublishing.com. We've been chatting with Amy Scobie. She's the author of Scientology, Abuse at the Top. Amy, how did you get out?
I got out. Oh boy, it was quite an episode. I was on the Rehabilitation Project Force, which is a correctional program, which I call a concentration camp within Scientology in the C organization, and I was in Florida, and I said that I wanted to leave. So immediately, and I also asked the person who is now my husband, if I decided to leave, will you go with me? Because I felt scared about leaving.
Because were you married at the time? In other words, your
no.
husband? No. Okay, but you were married to a gentleman who was in Scientology, yes?
Yeah, and he got kicked out, which I found out I was still married to him. And I didn't even know he was kicked out. He was kicked out and remarried in living in Arizona before
okay.
I even was informed.
There's another chapter in the book. Okay, yep.
But so much to say. But anyway, so the person that I was with, that I was... you know, on the program with, I asked him, if I leave, will you go with me? Which is breaking every rule imaginable. But he said yes. And the reason why I knew that he might is because I saw in his documents that he was in doubt about staying himself. So I took the chance and asked him that question. I had known him since 1983. He's a very good guy. We were both single in our mid-40s. But I was scared about leaving by myself because... number one, I had no money, none at all. I was 42. I'd never cooked. I didn't know how to drive. I never had, you know, I don't know how anything works. I had
42,
no
42 and never cooked. Boy, your dating life would be real sketchy after getting out.
You should have seen me. But anyway, so we then made a plan to escape. And we went and told the person who was in charge that we wanted to leave. And we were immediately separated and put under 24-hour guard. And we were put in separate locations, and we were put on hard manual labor, and we were fed beans and rice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for almost 2 months. We were trying to go through all the standard, quote-unquote, procedure to leave, which involves intensive security checking and all this kind of stuff, confessionals and all this kind of stuff, so that we could stay in good standing because we both have family members that were still Scientologists.
Right.
But despite all that, and the thing was dragging out and dragging out, finally my husband had to say, if you don't let us out by noon tomorrow, I'm going to grab Amy, and I'm going to bust through security and bust through the gates, and the only way you can stop me is to shoot me in the back of the head. And he told them that sufficiently forcefully enough that they believed him, and they did let us out. They put me on an airplane and put him on a bus. We didn't even know where each other went because they confiscated all of our information. But we did find each other afterwards and got together, and we got married 2 weeks later. That's been 5 years now.
Amy, do you know if they've ever, this is a bit, you know where I'm going with this, it's sort of a bit Hollywood, my question here. Do you have any evidence that they've ever harmed anybody physically because they've tried to leave?
I don't have evidence.
Because they have armed security, yes?
Yeah, they are.
So you've never heard of anyone being shot?
No, I haven't. And the one person that left just recently, like 2 weeks ago, that I've known for 25 years, I knew this person, he just left that international compound in Hemet, and they sent 20 people after him. And to try to track him down and everything like that to get him back. He's now starting to expose some of the stuff that went on. He was one of the people who actually was ordered by David Miscavige to put steel bars across the doors of the trailers where they were confining people.
Mm-hmm.
That's being exposed. And someone named Mike Rinder, I was actually talking about him, the one that was being strangled, but David Miscavige had some of these people walking on their knees only, and for ages, and he's got scars on his knees from that because they were abscessed and he didn't get medical treatment, and he's got scars on his knees from that. But so there is confining, there is you know, human rights violations and all sorts of abuse going on, and I'm just going to keep getting it exposed. I've told authorities about it as well, and they've, you know, I won't go into that because it's important that they just get on with their investigation.
Yeah.
But we're taking action on this, and I just want to raise people's awareness of, you know, when something looks all really great and innocent and everything like that, really look into it. Part of the thing also with Scientology is you don't know what the upper levels are. Everything's confidential until you finally get there or whatever. If there's something like that, it's kind of weird because you're paying and you're staying in to find something that you don't even know what it's going to be, and then you find out it's, you know, something crazy.
Yeah.
And it's terrible. And by that time, you've already dedicated your whole life to it, and your family's in it, and you can't just walk away so easy.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go.
Oh, Amy, I'm stressed. I'm like, oh, man, what a story.
It's a tough subject, but it's, you know, just like your program announces, things that aren't so easy to talk about.
Yeah.
I love your program, by the way.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Very kind. Well, Amy, I was trying to think of a nice sort of cool way to end the interview, and all I've come up with is some kind of cheesy Hallmark statements. But how do I say this? My prayer is that God will reveal the stuff about him that you really need to find now. Does that make any sense? I don't know if that makes any sense.
It does make sense. It totally makes sense. I've been speaking to people who say, you know, that they believe that God's given me a mission, you know, and I feel that. I feel it's important because it's going to prevent further people from being hurt and taking a wrong route, you know,
and that's what it is. And good for you for not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak.
Yeah. It would be easy to
do. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God.
But for you, Amy, for you to after all of this, to sit back and go, no, hold on a second. I still believe in a creator.
Yes.
I don't know. I think that that takes a lot of faith.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it's been quite a journey, but, you know, I think it's a good one. In the end, I'm glad I experienced it because now I'm able to do something about it.
Amy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hopefully we'll be in touch again.
Okay, then.
Okay, bye, Amy.
Bye-bye.
Amy Scobie, she is the author of Scientology, Abuse at the Top. ScobiePublishing.com is the website that you certainly want to go to. Scobie is spelled S-C-O-B-E-E, Scobie Publishing. Wow. Okay, from one tough story to another, when we come back, a few years ago I interviewed Pastor Peter Rigo from Dominion Christian Center in Hamilton, and his ministry I use that term lightly, was featured on the investigative journalism show W5, which claimed that he's a controlling and manipulative leader of a cult who convinced many of his parishioners to abandon their families for the church. Well, since then, this church has lost its charitable tax status, and there's a couple that were involved for a lot of years, Cole and Nettie. They were volunteer leaders at this church, but they've since moved on. And I'd like to hear what moving on looks like for this couple. And then, at the end of the show, we're going to lighten it up, folks. We need to after all this. Fred Penner's going to join us. I'm looking forward to that. We'll be right back.
Well, it may be the devil, it may be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
You may be a preacher, spiritual pride. Maybe a city councilman taking bribes on the side. Maybe working in a barber shop, you may know how to cut hair. And maybe somebody's mistress, maybe somebody's heir. But you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Hey everyone, this is Drew Marshall. Look, I just wanted to let you know about a brand new advertising opportunity here on The Drew Marshall Show. Every August, we replay the best celebrity interviews of the year, and our regular advertising partners absolutely love it because our listenership goes through the roof. Well, this August, we thought we'd offer a special deal for everyone. Imagine your organization, business, or charity's commercial being played right alongside back-to-back celebrity interviews with the likes of Larry King or hockey legend Paul Henderson or the star of CBC's The Dragon's Den, Brett Wilson, or wrestling's Jesse Ventura. Man, we've got so many to choose from. So here's the deal. We'll offer you 16 commercials, which we'll produce, and an advertisement on our website, all of which would typically go for about $800. But you get it for only $4.95 plus tax. Now, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but I think that's about a 40% savings. So become an August advertising partner with The Drew Marshall Show. 16 commercials and an advertisement on our website for only $4.95 plus tax. That's 40% off. Folks, you'd better get on this soon because spots are limited and this offer ends July 17th. So call 905-845-2821 extension 367. That's 905-845-2821 extension 367. Or contact us at drewmarshall.ca.